Can you tell me which call this is so I make sure I'm on the right call?
this is C, Nectar of the Registrant.
Good, okay.
With me, Neil Schwartzman now joins the call. And Len Mortensen and Neil Schwartzman are on the call.
Yes, thank you. I have not... I'm not very well prepared for this call for several reasons. I should have or would have liked to have mailed you an update of the note made before the last call. There have been several very useful suggestions to the discussions or points made in that that note, and I'll summarize the main point in a second, and I'd also like to have made an agenda for this call. I thought, by the way, of a small explanation. I thought until an hour ago that I would not be able to join the conference at all, but luckily I was able to. The main summarization of what I got from the discussions is that the small index or the small four section distinctions we made last time, the distinction between individual and corporate or business and between commercial and non-commercial still seems to be upheld by a majority as what makes it possible or as a basis to go ahead. This implies that the data protection issues are valid for those two squares of this little cross, which bears on the individual, while it's not valid for those bearing on a business. And for the section which both is commercial and individual, it is thought that the individual should consent to make data on the individual available to a greater extent than the last quarter, where it is non-commercial and individual. And this seems to be a sort of rather broad consensus, though there are discussions around this. Would anyone like to comment upon that basis of continuing, which we reached last time in a sense, but which has been confirmed by the discussion afterwards?
Yes, this is Lynn Goodendorf. I thought this was very useful to organize this way, and I'm looking at this matrix now on my computer screen. And I think that the whole question of, or the whole issue of what's causing a problem for various communities on the internet is this question of the criteria for establishing the status of
yes,
whether or not
that,
that seems to be the problem area.
There seems to be at least that's a problem area. There's perhaps one of the issues that emerged through the discussion, which I'd ask you whether you think should be clarified, but certainly I agree that the main question then is to how to make this operational.
Yes.
How to which criteria to use, and in using the criteria or in which procedures to follow in order to collect information about which of the categories are satisfied. And any other comments to the this?
Yeah, this is Chris Gibson. I
yes,
also wanted to, support the very clear matrix that was circulated. I think it's helpful for showing the four different possibilities. I think in relation to natural persons with a commercial objective, that is the criteria there. I understand the concern that there would need to be clear consent of the individual involved if they were to be in the quote open status, and for example, a self-declaration would be something that would meet that consent if they indeed voluntarily self-declared that they were intending or actually involved in commercial activities. The other point, I think, is if there is going to be any move towards self-declaration, which would obviously be the easiest to implement in many respects, it would have to then tie in very carefully to a number of the enforcement concerns that are being dealt with in subgroup A, because obviously there would be some potential incentive for those who are involved in online abuse to self-declare as a natural person with non-commercial objectives in order to, you know, do more towards masking their identity, and therefore it just reinforces how distinctions in this subgroup C are necessarily tied to some of the issues that might be addressed in subgroup A.
Neil Schwartzman here. I'd like to follow up on that point. Even though this actually speaks against my intent, I do have to say that spammers and virus people and spyware people tend to register dozens or hundreds or thousands of domains at a time and do domain tasting. And so one of the other issues that we certainly have to deal with, completely tangential to this process, of course, is domain tasting. But certainly, were we to limit the ability of a person to register self-declared, you know, Neil Schwartzman declares that he wants neilschwartzman.com, but I'm not allowed to have neilallenschwartzman.com or whatever. If we can limit the self-declaration, yes, you can have your single domain. I think that that would go a long way to also addressing some of the concerns that we have.
Go on.
This is Christina. This matrix is extraordinarily helpful, and I was hoping that I could just get some clarification. I wasn't on last week's call, but listened to the recording last night. Excuse me. And I think the one thing that I'm a little confused about is that the conversation last week and thus far today seems to be focused on commercial, non-commercial use, commercial, non-commercial activity, but the matrix is phrased more in terms of objective, which to me is a different standard, and I wasn't sure if there had been a decision to frame it that way or not. In the sense that you can have an organization, for example, that may have a non-commercial objective but nonetheless engage in commercial activity.
Yeah.
Similarly, and I think Ross gave the example during last week's call that I guess he's got a blog or a website, and in some cases there might be links or, you know, other types of indicia of commercial activity. So under the matrix as it's couched now, you could take the position that that use of his is natural person, non-commercial objective. But that wouldn't necessarily capture, for example, natural person, non-commercial activity, in the sense that the objective versus activity standard seems to be a different one. And I just want to make sure that if we are going to continue down that road, that we've intentionally decided to do that.
Hi, this is Jay Westerdahl.
Yes, please go ahead. Yes, Phil, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Jay Westerdahl. I'm just joining the call.
Oh, yes, thank you. Yes.
Yes, I agree with that previous comment. This is Lynn Goodendorf. That I was looking at the objectives as being similar to the concept of purpose, that it's almost as if we've organized this by purpose of the domain rather than really what type of entity the registrant is.
This is Chris, I hadn't focused on the word objective previously either, but in the matrix I think actually it's more helpful to remove it, because then you're looking more objectively at whether it is a commercial entity or not, or if there is commercial activity or not, and that is something that, for example, could be also tested after the fact in an objective way. If someone had somehow qualified to initially to be a natural person with a with non-commercial use, and someone later were to be able to point out, no, this website is clearly being used in commercial, you wouldn't really focus on objectives or purposes. You'd simply be able to look at it.
Right, exactly. That was my concern.
So I would actually propose to delete the word, the simple word objective in the labels of those four, to take emphasis away from purpose or objective as to more objective state of whatever the conditions are for each of the four cells in the matrix.
Yeah. Speaking of purpose, this Paul Stahura, I don't understand. Maybe somebody could explain it to me. The purpose of this distinction.
Well, it seems to me, for example, Paul, the reason I raise this is that what an entity or person's objective is can be, frankly, a very subjective thing,
yeah,
and not necessarily measurable. Whereas, if you use use or you use activity, that's much more easily identifiable. And to kind of use the example that is, I guess, the legal person. Non-commercial objective, in the U.S., for example, organizations that have qualified under the relevant tax guidelines as nonprofit organizations has nothing to do with whether or not they're engaging in commercial activity. It's whether or not the profit is going to a particular person or not.
Yeah.
So you can say if you use objective, that's one way you're going to get a different characterization of where they fall.
I understand that. I don't understand why we're making this distinction. What use, after we make the distinction, what's the use?
If I may make an observation, I think that however you qualify commercial, you will be in the... it will be possible to interpret it in different ways, and even within the law of one jurisdiction, you'll find that the definition of commercial is made in different ways, as with respect to tax law, or with respect to the duty of how to contract and making calls for contract and so on. At least this is what I see within my own jurisdiction. So I think we need perhaps to get to the layer below commercial and see by which criteria do we determine commercial. And one obvious possibility is only to rely on self-declaration. If you rely on self-declaration, then of course, again, that calls on the sanctions when the self-declaration is challenged. But I think I'd like to see some criterion, if we could find some criterion, objective criterion. I mean, one possibility would say to just make a reference to tax law and say that if you are treated as a non-commercial organization according to national tax law, this is what we mean by commercial or not. That possibility exists, of course.
I'm still not clear, I'm sorry, but let's say I declare myself as commercial and for profit and not a natural person, so I'm definitely on that side, what happens to my name? In other words, can I keep my name private?
As I see it, we haven't really made the decision of what happens to your name, but we're saying that in that case, data protection considerations do not apply, because you're outside the scope of data protection considerations according to the majority of national legislations on the subject matter.
Can I ask a question related to that? Mawaki here, please.
Yes, please.
I was wondering, I was not on the previous call either, I was wondering whether you considered using the word business or the category business as opposed to opposed to commercial, but instead of commercial, because I'm not sure if you specifically mean by commercial that it's an entity that has their stuff, or if the person or the domain name is registered for business purpose.
Yeah.
So I'm not implying where in this matrix business would be, but I just wanted to this to be clarified so that whatever you come up with.
Thank you.
Yes.
Should we take a step back and say, is there anybody who challenged the appropriateness of making the distinction between natural and legal persons? If not, we have that baseline, and then we have the problems over. Then we can check whether we think that in the dimension of commercial, business, or otherwise, that that is a useful dimension. And if that is so, then we are left with the harder problem: how do we make the distinction between non-commercial, non-business, or whatever, and commercial, business, or whatever? And I think that is a problem that is not going to be solved by a single word or a single term. We need to have some more operational criteria for making that distinction. Let's see. Christina was first, I think.
This is Lynn Goodendorf.
Yes,
I was going to say, I agree with that. And for example, in this question of business and commercial and different connotations there, I've thought about websites that perhaps do not collect money or have financial transactions, but do collect personal data, such as collecting people's email addresses, you know, having people register, or asking, or in some other way collecting personal data themselves. And so I think there could be some activities that we might not think of as commercial, but involve collecting personal data of other people on the Internet.
What if it's just a link that you click on that somebody makes money from?
Yeah, there are many ways of making money, and
exactly.
Yeah.
Then maybe that's.
And also, that tends to change over time. Something that.
What if there is no website at all, but they do make money by selling something not on the web? They just collect. They just use their domain to receive email, for example.
Yeah, and something can be commercial without there being anything but a loss. In all jurisdictions, education is seen as a commercial activity, and even though it is free of charge and has to be funded by outside funds, it still is looked upon as a commercial activity. Not defending that, but pointing that would not make a reference to earnings. Helpful in.
What if it's a commercial activity, but the proprietor is underage, like a child movie star?
Yeah, that is something else again that we have perhaps to look at the capacity of the person.
Let the bud Philip to speak, if I may.
Yes, please.
Thank you. I think we're in danger of making this more complicated than it needs to be. I think my take is that, as John had just outlined earlier, I remind you, our overall task of this subgroup is just to list some options. To my mind, we've already got our option one, and that is the clearer distinction between legal and natural persons, and maybe the outcome of that is legal persons open, natural persons closed, is option one. What we're now discussing, I think, is option two, with this more complex chart. I think I would certainly agree that perhaps the characterization activity is clearer to our earlier intent than objective, and that conversation was useful, I think, to add that clarification. But I think the only distinction we need to make, and the next suggestion I'd like to suggest, is are we all happy that self-declaration is the only practical mechanism at this point, and anything further should be subject to challenge mechanisms, I think.
I do have a question about that. Who is self-declaring?
The registrant.
Yeah, the registrant is self-declaring.
Yeah, my feeling is that this is really one of the main problem areas today, is that we have so many people who are not being honest in self-declaring.
Yes, that's exactly right. But to my mind, that is no longer our job. As soon as you have evidence of bad faith in terms of declaration, you then want to get hold of the operational point of contact and do something about that.
Mm.
That falls into the work of subgroup A.
Mm. So there is a strong relation between the sanctions and the initial classification.
And that was going to be my next point, in that we don't need to look at every possibility of every type of website. All we need to think of is where there is declaration, so where there is a self-declaration combined with bad faith, in other words, it's a false declaration, do we then want to do something about that, in which case, to my mind, it's, yeah, you want to contact the OPOC and sort it out, and that's fortunately not the job of this group. And I would suggest that that's all that needs to be done, actually, for what we're saying. And the only discussion we should have, I think, is about this option two. Do we need this level of detail in the matrix of these four combinations, or are two combinations, either legal or natural, sufficient?
Yeah.
And that, I think, is a question we should be debating.
Yes, because if you have the division between legal and natural, for natural persons, of course, there might be the option to say, do I want to retrain my data, or do I want to make them available? There may be the possibility of an informed consent at this point, that would have some of the same effect as making the full matrix.
This is Aubrey. Can I come back to the first part of the discussion that people were still on of
yes,
what
please,
this group needed to do? I think that I agree that it isn't the responsibility of this group to figure out how the review or how the sanction would necessarily go. I do think that, and this may tie into the second, that it is helpful in terms of passing on a suggestion if we say it's natural and legal persons, it's self-declaration. Then it's also helpful, though, to try and give a little bit more shape to what sort of criteria can be used to indicate that someone is not. In other words, because the definition I know exists on a legal and philosophical plane, but we may actually want to go down a level and indicate a certain number of things that indicate where the borders are. I don't think we can get necessarily precise, but I do think we need to go at least that one step further.
Mm.
This is Bertrand speaking. Just a comment regarding the ongoing discussion. I think there are two criteria that are very important that we haven't necessarily mentioned, although a bit on the side. One is simplicity, and the second one is durability. And simplicity, including for the users, so that they understand very easily what the regime is. Another element is, I noticed the remark saying, in case of bad faith, we should contact the OPOC and move forward from there. From what I understand about the OPOC proposal, the OPOC is just the contact point. It's not an organization that is in charge of enforcing anything. So if somebody is acting on bad faith, there is great likelihood that the quality of the information that is on the OPOC elements is bad. In addition, this is in connection directly with the work of subgroup B on the conditions for accessing more precise information. But the main point I wanted to make is I agree with some of the comments. The distinction between legal registrants, legal entities registering a domain name, and the natural individuals is relatively clear. It is relatively verifiable and relatively straightforward. The distinction between commercial and non-commercial is much more blurry.
Yep.
And the situation we have today might not be the situation we encounter in a couple of years and so on. So I'm wondering whether the distinction between legal and natural is not the most important in a system that would provide the open mechanism for legal entities and for all entities in general, and provide an option, a sort of opt-in self-declaration by people registering saying, I am a natural person and I request the protection somehow of the OPAC regime. And then in that case, the control that would be made afterwards would be relying on the possible bad faith regarding the self-declaration. And this self-declaration could, for instance, include not only the fact that you're a natural person, but that the main purpose of the activity on this domain name is non-commercial. This might include on a blog having a few sponsor links for supporting your activity, but the main purpose is not commercial. And then, if it happens that because of abuse or because of various cases where it has been demonstrated that the person has made a declaration in bad faith, then this would trigger a specific regime for access to the rest of the information through the work of subgroup B. But I think that the experience shows that the Internet has been basically built on good faith and a principle of flexible behavior for individuals and all actors acting in this world. I'm wondering whether an excessive delineation of regimes with subgroups and different modalities might not go contrary to the notion of simplicity.
Thank you. There seems to be drawing towards this consensus that the main distinction between natural and legal persons is sufficient, and that is reasonably clear. It's not totally clear, but it is reasonably clear, and that it can be based on self-declaration, which at least is a simple procedure. Then it has to be combined further with what to do if it is disclosed that this is this self-declaration is done in bad faith. Is that some sort of summary of what we have, where we are?
Excuse me.
I think that one should put it is. I do very much agree on the criterion simplicity, and that it is easy to implement, and anything but relying on self-declaration would need some third party or some person to be active in one way or the other. The simplest way of checking would of course be to check that the person exists according to a telephone directory or other types of open sources, but even that would be a certain amount of require a certain amount of resources.
You know, I do agree that it's simpler and easier to just go with natural and legal distinctions, but I don't think that this really steps up to addressing problems that users on the Internet are encountering. And just because this other area is more difficult and more complex, I don't think we should disregard it or, you know, step back from trying to address it somehow.
This is Lane Mortensen with, and I agree with that comment, actually. I think one of the issues we're going to run into is that we're not entirely connecting with some of these other groups that we are, you know, feel should be taking on some of these issues, such as the verification of status. And so if we entirely drop the issue as part of this group, we need to make sure that we connect with subgroup A in terms of enforcement.
Yes, I see that. But couldn't you, to me, who are I don't have your experience, but use your finger and draw a simple figure of what type of other problems you want us to address apart from the privacy issue? I understand that the quality or the correspondence to reality, that there should actually be that the data registered should correspond to the real data, that is an issue, the quality of data. But is there any other issue that I should...
To me, the experience that we're having is seeing deceptive registrations, people and organizations who are misrepresenting themselves in their domain name registrations, and it's for the purpose of malicious and often illegal activities.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, this is, in my mind, this is the real problem.
How will this self-selection help that?
I think it is easy to agree that deceptive registration and misrepresentation is something one would like to avoid, and that is a problem. So that I think should go without saying. That was actually what I was trying to say in my rather clumsy way. But
no question, we would all agree with that. But I don't understand how the self-selection could help that, because the bad actors are just going to lie.
Yeah, that's
Philip,
the problem.
Let me
the
only way you answer that.
Yes, please.
The current status of the OPOC proposal is that every registrant would have this limited set of data openly available.
That's not true.
Mm.
What? Not true?
Not true.
Sorry. Paul, would you like to elaborate on that? Because I think we should all understand a bit better if somebody's got the wrong understanding.
I sent my opinion to the list about what's, you know, the muss and the maze. And the OPAC proposal, what it does is it sunsets two contacts, the technical contact and the administration contact. That's how I look at it.
Sorry, Paul, you're not making yourself clear. I don't understand what you're saying.
Right now, there's three contacts shown in the output: the registrant, the administrative, and the technical contact.
Right.
So, with the OPAC proposal, the technical contact and administrative contact go away.
Yes.
And we're left with the registrant contact, and there's three fields of that, and we're left with an OPAC contact, which has a number of fields, including email, address, telephone, and so on.
Yes.
That's it.
What I was saying, to be more explicit, is that the current state of the OPAC proposal is that the information directly relating to the registrant would be more limited for everybody. And
not necessarily, because it depends what the OPAC contact says. And that's, I put in my message to the list, I said that's debate. It's a debate.
Okay. Well,
whether the registrant, if it doesn't select some other contact, whether the registrant output, or whether the OPAC output would be the registrant.
Oh, well, sure. That's indeed a coincidence that may well happen in many cases, as it does today. But anyway, the purpose of the discussion we're having here is to see whether or not we want to categorize registrants in a way that the OPOC proposal effect would be different.
Right. So you're saying if the person selects legal person, then they have no, the data protection does not apply, somebody said. So therefore, the OPAC, I would assume, must be the registrant information. Is that correct?
No.
Okay. Well, what is it then?
I would say again, it's up to the registrant to make whatever they want. But I think what we're saying here is that in the case of this is an option, as a legal entity, full WHOIS information will still be available, including the new OPOC.
Indeed.
In the case of natural, we would have it with limited information, full information about the OLPOC, limited information about Ritterstrand, and nothing else.
Yeah.
Okay, let me, I just want to do one example. Let's say I check legal, and I'm ExxonMobil, or I'm Exxon, and I'm about to merge with ExxonMobil, so I register at ExxonMobil.com, but I don't put Exxon in it. I put something else. Would that be allowed?
Well, allowed is, well, the answer I would say is yes, because nobody's stopping you, are they?
Yeah.
The question is, would that be challengeable, is a separate question in terms of the role of the OPOC in dealing with such a challenge.
Sounds like to me that if the person selects natural person and lied, then that's something that's actionable. But if the person, if the registrant selects legal and lied, what's the damage? So it shouldn't be actionable.
I would personally agree with that, but I don't think it's our job to determine liability, is it?
Well, it makes a big difference to me on what the how this choice will be used. So, to me, it does make a huge difference.
Yeah, but the choice will be used to at least to enforce or to make operational data protection legislation. That is one thing it will be used. It will.
I agree with that. I'm okay with that. I think you don't see the, you know, there's side effects that could occur besides that good benefit that we get out of this election.
Yes, certainly. That,
well, I think we still come back to this criteria for establishing the status, that if someone is registering as a legal entity, then what would be the criteria for establishing that status? Would they not have to provide some type of verification that they are who they say they are?
But don't this... isn't the basic question whether there should be a verification procedure related to the registration?
Yeah.
If there is to be a verification procedure, then we can start to ask what is the most simple registration verification procedure or something like that. But if we do not want to have a verification procedure, then everybody can register whatever they want, and there is no... function in the registration to reduce deceptive registration.
This is Jay
again. Just briefly, coming back to the question of misrepresentation of data.
Sorry, somebody is typing loud on their computer. Could they mute, please?
Coming to the misrepresentation of data, what I understood in previous discussions, including in the GAC, is that basically there were two different reasons for misrepresentation of data in the database. One was the misrepresentation by individuals who feared that their privacy would be invaded and that, for instance, they could be the target of spammers. Hence, they provide false coordinates. The other category is the voluntary misrepresentation of people who have a wrong intention, I would say.
Yeah.
What I understand at the moment from the OPOC proposal is that somehow it is changing the default setting of the WHOIS database from what it is today, which is basically open for all, to something that is basically closed for all, and with much less information on the contact and the registrant. The conclusion of that is this covers pretty well the first case of misrepresentation of data, because then individuals would have no reason not to provide their correct coordinates, because they would be shielded. On the other hand, the question that maybe we are asking ourselves here is, should there be an additional requirement or more visibility to data that is provided by legal entities? Isn't that the question that we're facing? And in the example of ExxonMobil is something that is slightly different, because this is not a question of misrepresentation of data, it's a question of confidentiality. And in that case, I don't see anybody having a problem with somebody registering ExxonMobil.com during a period on a personal basis and transferring it afterwards. The key problem is when the domain is registered and is leading to an illegal activity. Then we need to have procedures afterwards to get access to the correct data. And
I think with the ExxonMobil case, it's like, who I think it was Phil who said, it depends where the legal, where the liability lies. With the current registrar accreditation agreement, the liability does not lie with the with the entity that's shown in the who is output. As long as that entity gives up the information to somebody who's demonstrating actionable harm. So that is the crux of that side of it, in my opinion. This, the part about, you know, what if somebody lies? Somebody checks this checkbox and says, yes, I'm legal, and lies about it. You think they're going to not, you think they're going to tell the truth about their contact information? I don't think so.
Hmm. So yeah, but that, the whole point is it doesn't matter, because the moment you place obligations on the OPOC, and you've got a false OPOC as well, if you're totally in bad faith, you have a mechanism.
The guy could be a legal entity. You could check the box legal entity and be truthful about it, but then fill in false information for the rest of the information.
But then
you don't have any action to take because he told the truth, he is a legal entity.
But you're only interested if there's something illegal or against your civil rights happening on the website, and that's then a basis for eventually leading to takedown of the site, I guess is a typical outcome, which is what the
which is the same exact situation we're in today. We have it's exactly what we have today.
Absolutely.
So this won't improve it.
It won't improve this aspect.
Correct. That's right. It won't improve this aspect of it. In other words,
And I'm worried that it may make it worse because even though today we have this problem, the transparency of the WHOIS database at least provides some vehicle for identifying fraudulent sites or at least pinpointing where malicious or illegal activity is coming from. And, you know, with parts of WHOIS not transparent or not open, which is how I perceive the OPOC proposal, then I think it actually makes the problem worse.
Yeah. So your argument is that as misrepresentation is a problem, let's use misrepresentation as a general term,
yeah.
Misrepresentation is a problem, transparency is one strategy for directing sanctions or pressure towards those who make a misrepresentation.
Well, at least for identifying, you know, to some extent.
Yeah, but you see that as a... As
we
a
have that now, because if you put false who is, you could take down the name.
This is Christina. I have to agree with Lynn, and I actually, as much as I would like to believe that people are acting in good faith, I think as long as we're focusing, my personal belief is that as long as we're focusing solely on a natural person, legal person distinction, for all intents and purposes, we might as well be pointing big neon arrows at the natural person category saying, commit fraud here. And I think that in that context, relying on self-declaration isn't really going to advance the situation. And to the extent that I think I understand what Lynn is saying, yes, I see false WHOIS data all the time. But I can look at it immediately in most cases and know that it's fake, as opposed to having to wait, contact the OPOC, and then find out it's fake.
This is Lane Mortensen. I agree with that statement. I would also say that there are many cases that we run into when we're investigating phishing attacks on our organization, where WHOIS data is very valuable because the fraudsters don't always register a domain name to perpetrate their fraud, but they often take advantage of a vulnerability on a website, and the actual owner of the domain name isn't even aware that they're hosting the particular content they are.
No.
So we use that... Mm. information to contact the owner of the domain name and ask them to assist us in getting that content removed from their site. So they may be perfectly legitimate individuals.
Right, if that's the case, then contactability will help you. And I think that the OPAC proposal increases contactability because, you know, there could be, you know, I think this is one of the other subgroups looking at this, but there could be some responsibility to OPAC to make sure that messages get to the registrant, to the, especially to the right people at the registrant. So it seems like that would help your situation.
I'd like to interject here, Neil Schwartzman here. Look, with a lot of spam investigations, we're not talking about law enforcement. The vast majority of security investigations that go on the net are done by private companies and private individuals, private organizations that are looking to help mitigate the problem. By the time it gets to LEA, it's a real problem, and we're talking about big men with big guns going in to arrest people. The investigations that go on that use Whois, I can assure you, on a stack of Bibles, we absolutely use Whois every single day of the week to look for patterns, and we can tie those patterns to actual individuals and at least put blocks up, Spam House Project being a primary example of an organization that does exactly that. And it is to my great frustration that the individuals from Spam House are simply too tapped out for time to be here to underscore this fact for you in vivid detail. But please believe me, this is not some fantasy or anything to that nature. It is an actual reality.
I certainly believe that, but it seems to me that we are now returning to the rather old what is contrast between data protection on one side and trying to reduce fraud or misrepresentation on the other side. And it is by no means controversial that increasing data protection makes it more difficult for law enforcement or similar activities. But the conclusion on that observation is not necessarily that you therefore have to reduce data protection. You may see that you then have to tolerate that increased risk. And that is the conclusion which has been drawn by the European data protection legislation, of course.
Yeah, so, but I would like to think that data protection is something that we consider for everyone in the Internet community and not just registrants.
Thank you.
There's also a data protection element for people who are using the Internet who are expecting domain name registrants to be who they representing themselves.
That is not data protection, because that is not the processing of personal data. That is being deceived by misrepresentation. And that is,
I'm confused. Aren't we turning the subgroup into another subgroup at the moment?
Perhaps.
We're talking about
who
it is that can have access to data and why they need access to data. I forget what the letter was, but I thought this one we were really talking about what categories, whether it was possible and feasible to define categories of individuals, and if feasible, then what were they, and how do we define them?
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, that's true. We are talking about that.
Well,
but
it sounds like we were talking about...
That's the basis of this group, but we still need to figure out, in my opinion, the use of that.
Exactly. Yep. We're not operating in a void here. Decisions that are made here definitely have impact on the way that other things work as well. So this is not not a vacuum.
So then perhaps we're saying it is not possible to define two categories.
It might be possible, and it probably is possible, but what then is my question.
I do think that this ties very closely into the responsibility to validate the data that's provided.
Indeed. Yes.
Correct.
Yeah, that certainly seems to
be
a key.
Yeah, I think that's the whole
element.
Key.
Yeah.
I agree that would be great, but it's very difficult.
It does, but I think all of this, to my mind, and the critical group for those of you who are interested in the pursuit or prevention of bad faith activities, the critical group is 4A, to do with the roles, responsibilities, and requirements of the point of contact.
Yeah.
If nothing more comes out of that than the absence of responsibility of the admin and tech contacts we have today, then nothing whatsoever is achieved in the pursuit of bad faith by this proposal. If we are to make responsibilities and requirements concrete and have sanctions based on failure to respond, etc., then I think there is improvement in the pursuit of bad faith activities that we're all seeking. And going back to Avery's point, I think for me the only point of this subgroup is to say, can we from stage one make a useful distinction already, part of which would be challengeable in terms of bad faith and then lead to those sort of activities? And I think that's all we need to do.
I agree that seems to be a fair summing up of what we may achieve. If we look at the watch, we are closing in on end time. Should we try to make or should I try to promise you to have a summing up of this discussion, which try to focus on some of the points which I myself, with all my limitations, have been able to identify as critical, and hope that this will, I certainly feel that this discussion has brought us a step further, and perhaps another step can be added to it at the next conference, which may be the last one, perhaps.
Indeed, I think that'd be very useful, and by all means work with Maria in doing that short summary.
Good.
This is Bertrand, just briefly, following up on what Avery was saying. The key question with the distinction we have here is about, one, could there be different information gathered for the different categories? Second, could there be a different regime in terms of what is visible, including, for instance, less protection for legal entities? And three, are there or should there be different rules of access to the non-visible data, depending on the category? Maybe that would help feed into the other subgroups.
And I would add a fourth to that, and that is the responsibilities of those collecting that data, the registrars, I suppose, as to validate the information.
Yeah, and you could add the fifth one, that whether there should be the same rules for liability if misrepresented.
Yep.
Yes. Then I think I'll thank you all for joining the call. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thanks so much. Bye.